translation. To exhibit his personal way of austerity and penance, he appeared in twin forms of Narayan and Nara in the womb of Murti, the wife of Dharma, and the daughter of Daksha. Celestial beauties, the companions of Cupid, went to try to break his vow, but they were unsuccessful, for they saw that many beauties like them were emanating from him, the personality of Godhead. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. The Lord being the source of everything that be, is the original or is the origin of all austerities and penances also. Great vows of austerity are undertaken by sages to achieve success in self-realization. Human life is meant for such tapasya, with the great vow of celibacy or brahmacharya. In the rigid life of tapasya, there is no place for association of women. And because human life is meant for tapasya, for self-realization, factual human civilization, as conceived by the system of Sanatana Dharma, or the school of four castes and four orders of life, prescribe rigid disassociation from women in three stages of life. In the order of gradual cultural development, one's life may be divided into four divisions: celibacy, household life, retirement, and renunciation. During the first stage of life, up to the 25 years of age, a man may be trained as a brahmachari under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. Just to understand that women in the real that woman is a real binding force in material existence. If one wants to get freedom from the material bondage of conditional life, he must get free from the attraction for the form of a woman. Woman, or the fair sex, is the enchanting principle for the living entities, and the male form, especially in the human being, is meant for self-realization. The whole world is moving under the spell of womanly attraction, and as soon as a man becomes united with a woman, he at once becomes a victim of material bondage under a tight knot. The desire for lording it over the material world under the intoxication of false sense of lordship specifically begin just after the man's unification with a woman. The desire for acquiring a house, possessing land, having children, becoming prominent in society, the affection for community and the place of birth, and the hankering for wealth, which are all phantasmagoria or illusory dreams, encumber a human being, and is thus impeded in his progress towards self-realization. The real aim of life, the brahmachari, or a boy from the age of 5 years, especially from the higher castes, namely the scholarly parents, the Brahmins, the administrative parents, the Kshatriyas, or the mercantile or productive parents, the Vaishyas, is trained until the 25 years of age under the care of a bona fide guru or teacher, and under strict observance of discipline, he comes to understand the values of life, along with taking specific training for a livelihood. The brahmachari is then allowed to go home and enter household life and get married to a suitable woman. But there are many brahmacharis who do not go home to become householders, but continue the life of naisthiki brahmacharis without any connection with women. They accept the order of sannyas, or the renounced order of life, knowing well the combination with women is an unnecessary burden that checks self-realization. Since sex desire is very strong at a certain age of life, the guru may allow the brahmachari to marry. This license is given to a brahmachari who was unable to continue the way of naisthika brahmachari, and such discriminations are possible for the bona fide guru. A program of so-called family planning is needed. The householder who associates with women under scriptural restrictions after a thorough training of brahmacharya cannot be a householder like cats and dogs. Such a householder, after 50 years of age, would retire from the association of women as vanaprastha to be trained to live alone without the association of women. When the practice is complete, the same retired householder becomes a sannyasi, strictly separate from woman, even from his married wife. Studying the whole scheme of disassociation from women, it appears that a woman is a stumbling block for self-realization, and the Lord appeared as Narayan to teach the principle of womanly disassociation with a vow in life. The demigods being envious of the austere life of the rigid brahmacharis would try to cause them to break their vows by dispatching soldiers of Cupid. But in the case of the Lord, it became an unsuccessful attempt when the celestial beauties saw that the Lord can produce innumerable such beauties by his mystical or mystic internal potency, and that there was consequently no need to be attracted by others externally. There is a common proverb that that a confectioner is never attracted by sweetmeats. The confectioner, who is always manufacturing sweetmeats, has very little desire to eat them. Similarly, the Lord, by his pleasure potential powers, can produce innumerable spiritual beauties and not be the least attracted by the false beauties of material creation. One who does not know alleges foolishly that Lord Krishna enjoyed women in his Ras Leela in Vrindavan or with his 16,000 married wives at Dwarka. Om Ganti Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pastatya Deshatarine Pumsam Sriya Maithun Adi Bhavam Etam. This is the verse from Rishabhadev in the fifth canto. And, he's preaching to his 100 sons, and he's saying that, right at the beginning of life, Kamaram Acharet Pragna Dharmam Bhagavatamihya Dulabham Manasam Janma Tadapa Ardruthan Artadam. Actually, this is Prahlad Maharaj, I think. But anyway, it's the same point, is that from the very beginning of life, we should give up all desires for sense gratification and render devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if we're a little successful in that service, we perform a little devotional service, we can have complete perfection. So the key point is there has to be renunciation. It mentions Varnashram, where all the Varnas and all the Ashrams, that principle of renunciation is the key factor which it's trying to promote. And other principles of other spiritual processes, it's described in Bhagavad Gita, then there's complete abstinence from sex life in order to make progress. But he said, Prabhupada explains that this process of bhakti yoga is so powerful that this connection between male and female is allowed. Why? Because, you know, Vishaya Vinivarhante Neharashidenam Raso Varjam Rasopyasya Param Param Drishva Nivarte. Because Param Drishva Rasopyasya, there's a higher taste in devotional service which completely nullifies any other taste. It's not a problem. In other disciplines, they have to really work at this process of celibacy. They have to really work at, you know, learning the scriptures, tapasya, so many other things. And then, you know, very few achieve success. Ye revindaksya vimukta maninas. Tvayasta buddha avishuddha buddheva. Arurikrichtena padam padam pada. Padanti ada nadrida yasmut angraya. He says that they fall down from their position, even if they attain it. I was actually at the Kumbh Mela in 1989. It was I was going to Vrindavan, actually. It was the first time they started having, you know, organized classes or seminars. And it was Rory Inyananda, and he says, we're just coming into land, and we got off the plane. So I'm going to Kumbh Mela. Does anybody want to come? I didn't know what Kumbh Mela was. I said, I'll come. Very good. I thought, if Rory Inyananda's going, I'm going. That's what I was thinking. Anyway, we went on the, waited for the train. We went to Delhi. We're from Delhi to Allahabad, and then we got off the train. We started walking through this sea of tents on the riverbed. It was the riverbed of the Sarasvati. It's the confluence of the three rivers: Yamuna, Ganges, and Sarasvati. But the Sarasvati is underground now, and there was nothing but tents for as far as you could see, you know. And all these, it said there's 30 million people. This was the Mahamag Kumbh Mela, the big one. You know, they have them every year, but this one's when it's a special, every 12 years is a special Kumbh Mela. And it says there's 30 million people there. That takes some organizing. And so we're walking through this, and we saw all kinds of different, you know, practices. One person had been still on one leg for 3 years, and everybody, wow, look at that, you know. And then another person, he actually got his head buried in the earth, and he was still alive. And then we walked past some others; they were all smoking chillings, and there were all Westerners with them. These were the night, you know, they were great Nagababas. And anyway, I was thinking, and then we went in a big white tent. It was like, you know, a big pandal, huge. When inside, there was nothing inside. There was just a small little tent in the middle. So we went in, and there was nothing in there either. Just a white table, you know, white cloth over. So what kind of practice is this? So we were thinking, it must be impersonalism, you know. Anyway, we thought, wow, this is really an austere place. And then all of a sudden we had this chik-chik-chik-chik-chik-chik-chik-chik-chik-chik-boom-boom-boom-boom-boom. And we saw these big Vishayis, sense enjoyers, coming up towards us, playing it with the devotees. And this is our austerity, isn't it? A complete difference. The process is what they call susukam avyayam, and it's continuous. It's very joyful, and it's easily performed. So in this way we can overcome. So if we perform the process nicely, what's the two main facets of remaining fixed in devotional service? Especially with regards to not having the mind wandering. Because sure as anything, if the mind wanders, eventually it'll fix on the opposite sex. No doubt. Because that's the principle of material existence. So mind, stop the mind wandering. First thing is morning is japa. You know, if we can actually really focus on our japa during the morning period, then, you know, we've actually, we're mostly there. But we're not quite. What else do we need? We have to be properly situated in service. If we've got a service which is enlivening, then, you know, we're also fully engaged, and, you know, the combination of both keep us very nicely fixed in devotional service. So otherwise, you know, these things, first there's connection between man and woman, and then there's offspring, then there's a house, then there's offspring, and then there's little children, bambinos. And then, you know, just imagine it's actually increasing our commitment to looking, to actually being focused on this particular family life. And then, you know, 25 years, if we're lucky, we actually have to live with that. But still, if we've got these two things I mentioned, if we've got attachment to the holy name, and we've got a good engagement in devotional service, then we can actually weather that situation. But it's a long way, and there's so many. So better if we can actually stay, you know, celibate, but we see it's not generally possible. And so, you know, Prabhupada started to, in the beginning, Prabhupada, he started to marry his disciples. He started to, you know, the first one was Hayagriva. He was brahmachari. And he was having some troubles, you know, and he went to Prabhupada. He said, "Prabhupada, you know, I'm having trouble with my mind, you know, and I think after you get married." And Prabhupada went, "Hare Krishna!" He just shouted Hare Krishna. And for a while he was trying to get him to concentrate on the chanting. But then he realised that, you know, Westerners may not be able to do that. So then he started marrying his disciples. He adjusted for the situation. And we see in, you know, the history of ISKCON that there's no difference really. So many grihasthas are so austere. You know, it's more austere than the sannyasa ashram in one respect. And, you know, this movement is going to be founded on... What is it going to be founded on? On grihasthas. It's not going to be founded so much on sannyasas. How many sannyasas is there? Oh, probably over 100 now. And brahmacharyas, not much more, really. Probably, you know, probably 1,000 or something. Anyway, whatever it is. So, you know, what can they do? I used to go door to door. When I was in Manchester, I was there for about 16 years, and most of that time I was doing door-to-door. And, you know, I got invited into some places. Some people invited me in, and, you know, initially I got on well with them. You know, I thought, oh, these people are normal, you know. And but then when after some time, and they were actually inquiring about the practice in their particular life, you know, I could tell them theoretically, but I could see with the faces, thought, you know, he's not leading a life like us. And, you know, I lost them a little bit. So what does it need? It needs people who are walking the talk. It needs those who are in that ashram. They should preach. And that's the, you know, first thing is look after the ashram. We have to look, otherwise everything else won't work. That goes without saying. But still, some preaching is needed from everybody in the Grihastha Ashram. And, you know, the movement's becoming more more consolidated on Indians. You know, we're preaching to Westerners like anything. But it's so difficult. They don't take to the philosophy so easily. They don't take to temple life, coming to the temple regularly so easily. So the preaching has to be out there. And it takes, you know, Devamrita Maharaj said, if somebody's serious, it takes 5 years before they become something like. And he should know, he's preaching to many Westerners. So, you know, we don't want to become a temple, just a temple movement. You know, we have to become an outreach movement more and more. And that means that, you know, the married community have to take it upon themselves to, you know, do the brunt of the preaching. And I was once giving a class, and I said, a little from a lot. And Shivram Maharaj said, a lot from a lot. He was actually expecting everybody to really. But yeah, a little from a lot. And, you know, this is how to, you know, when they give me this verse about Narayana Rishi, I thought, oh my God, I don't know anything about Narayana. It's always been a, is it one person or two? You know what I mean? Is he a Rishi or is it? Is it this one? And it's both. It's, you know, it's both actually. Depends on his mood. Yes, so if we want to be austere, if we want to be renounced, then preach. If we preach, we get such a nice taste. And it is so enlivening, you know, we feel fully satisfied. Even if we don't do anything. You know, we just feel, you know, today it was worthwhile. I did something useful. We're doing something useful all the time in devotional service. But, you know, when we actually try to give Krishna consciousness, it has a different flavour. So maybe I should say something about... So the main point is nice rounds and suitable service. And the suitable service for everybody is to do a little bit of preaching. Even if we just, you know... best way of doing books nowadays... I mean, unless you're a real avid book distributor, for most people, is to have a book table. You have a book table, you have a nice saffron cover over it, you have all, they're really attracted to saffron for some reason. And you have all the books there, and you have a few devotees at each side distributing books, some playing the, you know, singing, harmonium, and you get crowds, crowds of people gathered around. And then some come and look at the books, the tape books. And if we keep doing that, everybody can do that to some degree. Then, you know, we'll be enlivened and we'll be sense-controlled and the movement will expand. It may not show on the surface so much because we're preaching mostly to Westerners. But they're chanting. I meet so many people. But they're like, they seem like... lay devotees, is that the right word? Lay devotees, they're not actually so prominent, but they're there. You know, if I distribute books, when I went to Manchester, we go door to door sometimes, and sometimes the street, and it's amazing how many people are really interested. And they'll read the book, but they won't come to the temple. So they're reading them. And so we're creating a whole basis for the next stage. We should see like that and not be too enamoured by if there's not so many people come to the temple. The temple's for the congregation. They come every so often and get enlivened, and but they, you know, they're practicing in their own situ. So we have to work at it. Just look at the Christian religion in England and many Western European countries, in the middle of the village, what is there in the middle of the village? Church. Hey? Church. A church. You see, this, if you get off the motorway and you drive through the lanes, you'll see one spire after another in the middle of the villages. And that was only two, Prabhupada said, one of his disciples said, Prabhupada, he says, this materialistic civilization has been prominent for a long time. Prabhupada said, no, this is only 200 years. When the Industrial Revolution started, that's when everything started to, you know, decay. So people were centered around, you know, just 200 years ago, their life was around the church. Didn't have so many things. When I first started work, You know, there were some old colliers there. They were actually, 60 years old, 70 years old. Not 70, but 60-odd years old. And, when they were telling about how they've lived their life, they didn't even have running water. They had to get it from a well. You know, it was very simple. And then everything was spoiled when the Industrial Revolution came. And so look, the point I'm making is, look at it now. When I was in the 60s, they've made the local, there was a song, they've made the local pally into a bowling alley. We've made the local, church into a bowling alley. They were turning them into bowling alleys, if they were big enough. And then, now they're actually hotels. Some of them, big ones, are like, people, they have a few rooms in them. And now, last time I saw one, it was a bar selling drink. So actually, unless we really work at trying to preach to the indigenous people, the Indian congregation, they're going to be very much affected by their association, that Western association, especially the youth. And then, they're going to be less interested than the fathers. And so, what's going to happen to the temples? It's going to be the same story. So we have to preach it. We have to preach to live. Prabhupada said, actually, preaching is life. One particular time he went out, he didn't even have time to take prasadam. They had so many events for him, and he was giving preaching at every one. And he came back at night, and they made him some hot puris and hot milk. And he was taking these hot puris and milk, and he was relishing them. He says, this is life. He says, preaching all day and some prasadam at night. And so that's what we should be aiming for. If we do it now, while we're in the thick of it, we've got children, we've got this, that and the other, make a little bit of time for preaching. We'll be actually eager for it when, the children have grown up. Unless you practice early on in life, you can't change so easily later in life. If we don't train devotees who come to the temple in a preaching mood, after a year or 2 years, they get comfortable, in their particular... And then it's very difficult. This is what devotional service is. And the preaching is actually overlooked. So, the Indian congregation are as capable, if not more capable, of preaching. I remember I did door-to-door here many years ago, and there was a group in... I forget where it were. But there's one devotee there. What's his name? They were doing a little bit of door-to-door, and I went to encourage them. And I said, they're doing it better than me. They got the spiel and everything. And they were preaching to Westerners. And I think they're still doing it. So, it's just a matter of training. Krishna consciousness takes us off the bodily platform. And at that point, we're ready for training. And if devotees are trained to preach, they'll do it. And what happens then is we haven't got a big weight around our neck, trying to maintain the devotees we've made who were actually not active in that way. They become very enlivened, and then they take responsibility. So, we can't lose by just doing that little bit of preaching. It may be a little bit of blow for the false ego, but who cares, Who cares? I remember when I went to... I was going to the Manchester Temple, and Rancho was there. And he said, why don't you go to Chaitanya College? There's many devotees there, and, there's deities, and you'll get good association. It'll enliven you. So the next week I went... And, he was right. Then on the second day, I was taking prasadam, and all the devotees started rushing about. And, I said, where are you going? He said, we're going on Harinam. Do you want to come? I said, what's Harinam? And they told me, I said, not likely. but false ego. I thought, I'm not going to the middle of the town chanting Hare Krishna, you know. And then they came back later, and I saw their faces, and I said, when's the next Harinam? So it's there, there's actually a block, we've got a break, devotional service dissolves the false ego. And we preach, and it's like very quick. So, anyway, it's 9:30 now. Is anything else to say? So it's important, there's one story. That's it. There's one story of there was one very rich person in the at the base of the Himalayas, and so he wasn't too far from Badrikashram where Nara and Narayan do their austerities. Is that right? So they sometimes call it Badri Narayan, don't they? And so he was thinking, I want to make a big donation to the deities at Nara and Narayan. And so that night he went to sleep and he had a dream, and Narayan Narayan Rishi came. He said, look, you're better off donating to Raghunath Das in Vrindavan. He's one of the Goswamis. He can use it in a better way. And so when he was elated to have had that dream, he thought, anyway, the deities have given me an instruction. And so he went to Vrindavan and he found, Raghunath Das Goswami. And he wouldn't accept the donation at first. But then when he told him about this dream, he accepted it. And that's when they started building the temples. So, we're hearing about Nara and Narayan Rishi. They're none different from, Lord Chaitanya in one respect. It's not Rasa Bas, but, Lord Krishna, Vishnu, they all have the same principle. This material world is meant to rehabilitate the conditioned souls. So if we want to worship Nara and Narayan Rishi, we don't have to go all the way to Badrikashram. We can, by this story, we can worship them by following in the footsteps of this. They call him Samarpan, this businessman. He gave to the Vaishnavs. So we either give for the process of preaching or we preach ourselves. And this will please Nara and Narayan Rishi. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for your class. I was just going to ask, when we talk about preaching, is it absolute? So is there like more than one type of preaching that we can do? And if there is, what is the most important type of preaching for someone like a neophyte devotee, someone in the early stages of their Krishna consciousness?
No, we don't have to wait to preach. We just preach what we've got, whatever we, even if we've only, when Sarasvati was, Prabhupada and Shama Sundar and Malati with the little baby Sarasvati went to one program and there was many guests there, and one of Sarasvati was a little toddler. She ran to one particular guest and got a little, doll of Krishna. He says, this is Krishna, and he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada say, see, even a little child can preach. So we give what we can. Whatever we've learned, we can give. It's not difficult to preach because nobody has any real information anyway. Nobody has any. They don't even know they're not the body, most people. So it's very simple. And actually by going out and distributing books, we learn to preach. We learn to deal with people, we learn to see where they're coming from, we learn to see various arguments they're making. And this is preparing us for the next stage. We can carry on distributing books, but the next thing is to actually cultivate people who are a little bit more knowledgeable, like that. And yeah, we've so much preaching to do.
Thank you, Marge. Just thinking sometimes when people read these purports, not just new people but even devotees, it can feel a little like devotees even, they may not say, but it feels a little, they may not be so able to accept it, you know, it feels
able
a little...
To. Accept
it, yeah. It feels a little patriarchal, maybe, like always coming from a man's perspective, that, you know, like Prabhupada says, woman or the fair sex is the enchanting principle for the living entities, and the male form is meant for self-realization. So, like, it can just always, like, some people feel it comes from a very man's perspective. And, you know, I think non-devotees, they, like, will say openly. And me, in the devotee community, maybe don't say openly, but even may feel inside a little discouraged. So can you just say some words as to, like, how we can understand these kind of statements and not feel distant or disconnected from Srila Prabhupada because of them.
Yeah, I mean, this forum we can speak like that, but it's not in every forum we can... We have to even in this forum we have to explain it nicely as well, actually. And, you know, basically, you know, we're not the body. We manage the same as a woman in that respect. We're not the body, so we're actually the same. We jivera swarupai krishnera nichidas. And but according to our work in this world, we are conditioned. We've conditioned to a certain intelligence, a certain mindset, and a proclivity for a certain activity, which has come due to, you know, daiva netrina by the Supreme Lord through the demigods, and due to our karma. Due to our work in this world. And so, you know, the principle is that a devotee should always remember that. Because if we don't remember that we're not the body, then there's so many problems. Even amongst devotees. The biggest sin is to actually think we're the body. And so, you know, within the society at least, we should understand that I'm not the body. I'm not a woman and I'm not a man. But I have a particular role to play. And Prabhupada said this movement is dependent on cooperation. Its success is dependent on cooperation. So, you know, even though we're conditioned heavily, we should at least understand the philosophy and try to apply it. That's one thing. It may not be possible fully, and we're still overcome by the false ego. But as much as possible, practicing devotees have to try and fulfil that role. On the other side is that we can't do it straight away in many cases, and so Prabhupada engaged both men and women in active service, and he actually said that the women are doing as much as the men. I remember when I had not been on the Sangatan crew for activity for long, and Shivram Maharaj said, hey, you know, deep voices, why are they... What was he talking to now? Tridundi. Why are the women doing more than the men? I'll not tell you what he answered, but anyway. But, yeah. So, internally, we should all be respecting one another for the service that they do. That's the way a devotee sees. He doesn't see the external. He's thinking, wow, they're doing so much service. And but still, externally, there's a certain etiquette in order for it to, you know, so there's not too much connection between man and woman. this is not going. This is not answering your point, but I'm just making that. We have to be careful. We have to see the audience and just preach in a suitable way. I'm not blowing my own trumpet here, but I went to have some treatment by this therapist for the stomach, you know, and I was the brahmachari with me as well, and it was a Mataji actually, and I forgot what the treatment now, you know, manipulation, and she was Jewish, and her husband. She was telling me about her husband, how he's like, you know, he's really a hard worker, and he works so hard that he had to have a new shoulder joint in or something, you know, and they changed his shoulder joint and he carried on working. And she was saying, you know, men are not like, you know, men are really getting into doing things, and women are a little bit, and she was a little bit disturbed, you know, about the inequality of women. And I was just saying that, you know, actually women are the impetus for men to act. A good wife is the energy of the husband. You know, Hare, the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hara. So that's coming from the spiritual world, that a woman gives a man energy if she supports him nicely. So this is another factor, you know, from the woman's side has to take into consideration. And the results are the same for both if we do our duty. This movement, this process is so powerful that, you know, a woman can practice the process just like a man and get the same result. You know, separately. In the Vedic culture, a woman would follow the man and get the same result as a man, because they're not necessarily following this process of bhakti yoga. But there's one problem, actually, from the men's side. The men have to be really serious about devotional service, otherwise it won't work. If the women see the men are not serious, they'll not want to follow. The male has to set the example. He has to be very strict and very together in his practice. And then, you know, the woman will feel confident. Otherwise, it won't work. And we see there's so many... maybe this is one of the main reasons that... I don't know whether it's still the same, but the divorce rate is higher in ISKCON than it is in the outside ISKCON. There are other factors as well, is that we're practicing devotional service. Both partners have to be serious. So it has got that, you know, difficulty. But we know better, don't we? Guru na sasyat, vajano na sasyat, pita na sasyat, jananin tatat syam, devim na tat syam, na patist tatat syat.
You know, a devotee is, when we actually get initiated, it's not, you know, we have to really understand what we're doing and take it seriously. You know, we're promising that, you know, material life's over. And therefore, if we get married, it means that the marriage is to facilitate, you know, Krishna conscious children, really. That's all. I have a particular need due to this body. It's fulfilled under proper vows, and we produce children. And my aim is to make them Krishna conscious. So, you know, if we're seen like that, then everything's possible. otherwise, it's pointless, actually, connection between man and woman. What else were there? There was another point about that, but when in doubt, leave it out. you know, don't preach, don't, if you're not sure it's going to have a good effect, then, you know, be a bit reserved and then see what else the person says if he's not a devotee, and then you can actually, like that. It's, yeah. If anybody wants to run take prasadam, don't worry, you can go.
If you want to encourage someone that you know for sure, that person knows Shastra and it's a long time devotee, how do you encourage that? But that person is very shy as well. How do you encourage that person to preach? How do you encourage that person to, like, share that knowledge? I mean,
which person are you talking about? A devotee.
A devotee, yeah.
If they're what? I didn't catch the first part.
Sorry.
How do you, what's the symptoms of the person? I didn't hear that.
Well, very shy.
Very shy, okay.
Very shy, very reserved, but has a great knowledge of Shastra. And,
well, the thing is...
Is there a trick? Or is there a particular way that you know, can encourage that person to preach to others?
Well, like I said, at book table, first thing is that a person just has to go and stand there, you know, and he can stand a little bit away from the book table and let everybody else do everything, and at least he's there. That's the first thing. And then you just naturally start to develop the mood of the people you're with. And when you see, you know, the effect it has on people, then, you know, you become more inclined. You just have to associate with what you want to become. And so, you know, first thing is, you don't have to do it, just come and stand and watch us, you know. And then you can stand there, you know, distribute the prasadam. And you can distribute the leaflets. You know what I mean? Yeah. I remember, I'm very shy, still am, you know. Still, it's still there, the ability not to be so outgoing, you know. But it naturally comes if you do it. And Krishna takes over if you're actually really fired up. You realise that this is not usually what I'm like, you know. And you realise that Krishna's empowering you. So when we start to experience some empowerment by making that initial step, then we become encouraged. Last question, yeah.
Hare Krishna Swami, just a really quick question. You mentioned about distribution of books. Sometimes when you have a table, it seems to be a lot more easy because the public's coming to you. So what would be your top three tips for knocking on the door and someone doing it for the first time? What would be your hint and tips for
door-to-door? Knocking on the door?
Yeah, for someone that's never done it on the door, but done it on the table. Seems to be a lot more
You want to start doing the doors?
Yeah, knocking on people's doors. What would be your top three tips, Hare Krishna?
I don't know. It just, by practice, you actually you start to pick up the mood. It's, you know, just there's no one way to do things. Everybody's different. But basically, you just have to engage them straight away, like you do when you're, as soon as somebody comes to the table, you don't let them think too much. You have to start, you know, talking to them. So when you go to the door, as soon as you open the door, you immediately start speaking, explaining where you're coming from, and keep them engaged for a while. And then you can, then when they're a little bit relaxed, you can give them a book. So, you know, you need to learn a few introductory lines and how to lead on to the next, and then something to, you know, like an icebreaker, and then after you've gone through that, it needs a little what do you call it, when you show people a little seminar on it, a practical seminar on somebody doing it, you know, play acting. Or easier still is just if anybody who's going out door to door, you just go out with them. and you pick up the way they do it. Okay. Okay, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.